Guardian Unlimited.
With millions displaced, hundreds of thousands dead, and countless women raped, the crisis in the Darfur region of Western Sudan is recognised as the world's greatest humanitarian disaster. Yesterday, a group called Act for Darfur hosted an 11-hour arts festival at London's Tricycle Theatre. They were hoping to inform, inspire, and equip visitors to do something about the crisis. Newsdesk's Francesca Panetta was there, and she began by asking the event's coordinator, Rachel Grunwald, what she could expect from the day.
We decided that we would use all the creative means at our disposal to bring the stories of what's going on in Darfur to the attention of visitors and to help them understand and empathise and really draw close to what was going on, and hence to inspire them to take some kind of action. And what that's given rise to on that skeleton structure is an entire festival of films which we've shipped in from around the world, debates on the history of Darfur, on the situation with asylum seekers, a visual petition whereby everybody who comes will make a handprint on a quilt which we'll sew together into a huge banner. We've got Peter Brooks, the Times cartoonist, coming down to lead sessions about using art as visual protest, and workshops with Darfuris, and workshops for children with Darfuris. We have a gallery full of photographs. And did I mention the storyteller?
Borto, running across the hills like thunder, dripping strings of saliva from his mouth in one...
Hi, my name's Rachel Rose Reed. I'm the Young Storyteller of the Year 2007 in the UK, and I'm telling stories that I found through working with and researching with some of the Darfuris that I have met.
Half spindly spider's legs running over the hills, gripping every creature he found in his path, ripping it apart and slipping it down his throat and into his belly.
So what kind of stories are these? Three stories today. I found a fantastic story that travelled down the Nile and then spread out across the Sudan of a woman who disguises herself as a man, slightly in a Twelfth Night kind of way, and wins back a share of land for her family and some love on the way. I have a fantastic story from Darfur about a people eater called Borto and the man and woman that bring life back to the earth.
Borto was a monster. Borto was hungry.
How did you find these stories? Some of the stories I found through careful research, looking at work by anthropologists who've collected stories from the Sudan. The difficulty, as in many places where there's been genocide, is that a lot of stories are lost, particularly if the culture has not been to write them down before. I also have worked with some of the asylum seekers, and some of them have asylum now as well, and refugees who are from Darfur, who've been helping us make sure that the day reflects what they want to reflect.
And is there a particular characteristic, a particular style of Darfuri or Sudanese traditional stories?
I can only speak from my experience of the people I've met. They tell me that there's a lot of stories that they're told as they're growing up to keep them within the community so they don't go off into areas where there might be dangerous animals or dangerous people. It seems like they're so often close to the storytelling tradition that there's not a concept as we necessarily have for them.
We set ourselves three key aims when we were programming everything. We told ourselves that everything had to fit into the category of learn, empathise or act. So everything is either about teaching people something they didn't know before they came to the day, and I suppose my passion is about helping people understand the story behind the headlines, because the headlines as we hear them are Arabs versus Blacks, which is a very interesting and easy way to portray the conflict. But as far as I'm concerned, communities that have coexisted, maybe not peacefully, but coexisted for centuries, don't just turn on one another. There's all kinds of external manipulation and other factors, including global warming and proxy wars between Libya and Chad, and neglect, first from a colonial government and then from a Khartoum government, that gave rise to this conflict that we see now in Darfur. And conflict of this sort is really not new in Sudan, and those were some things that I wanted to explore in the day. So that's a little bit about the learn strand. The empathize strand is really helping people understand the stories, rather than getting what we know is Africa fatigue from hearing about another tragedy in Africa. So for this purpose, we have engaged actors to read testimony taken from Darfuri asylum seekers. We've engaged photographers to do photo essays of Darfuri asylum seekers, and we're really using everything we can do to collapse the distance between the visitors and the situation in Darfur. And the final is ACT, and we have invited representation from any number of organisations and charities, including the Refugee Council, including the Aegis Trust with campaigns against genocide, including campaigning experts to teach people how they can connect with Parliament and lobby for policy change, so that Everybody who comes on the day will have a chance to learn how to make a difference, or to donate on the day, or to write a letter. So one debate we've programmed is called Too Little, Too Late, the International Response to Darfur, which is questioning how the international community has responded to Darfur.
And on that panel was Brendan Cox, Executive Director of Crisis Action.
The first question that we addressed was how the international community has responded so far to the situation in Darfur. How effective has it been? On which benchmarks do you judge it? And then the second element was, okay, accepting, as everybody did, that the response had been too little too late, how do we move forward into a situation where there is a more effective response in the future? And that focused around how we engage with governments, what sort of levers are out there in terms of political campaigning. We talked about divestment, we talked about trying to engage individual politicians in it, and then basically a discussion about where do we go from here in order to make sure that in future the campaigning is more effective in order to get a more effective response.
Someone who has a very clear idea about what we should be doing is actress Mia Farrow. She came to the Tricycle Theatre to talk about her experiences in Darfur and what should be done next.
Khartoum has the full and unwavering support of a giant, and that giant is China. As we know, massive oil companies pour oil revenues into Sudan to the tune of about $2 billion a year. Some 70% of that money is used to attack the people of Darfur. Now we look to China. Also, it's protected Sudanese interests on the Security Council, rendering toothless every single resolution. Now they're hosting the Olympic Games. I say they cannot host the Olympic Games at home and underwrite genocide in Darfur, that the two are inconsistent. And I suggest that we all push to use our points of leverage on the sponsors, on the Olympic Committee, to demonstrate that this is not appropriate. The United States has no economic leverage. UK, even less. We really have to look at China and push hard.
What about sending in troops? What about military action?
The peacekeepers authorized in July. The latest UN resolution, 1769, authorized peacekeepers. But in fact, composition of the force and its ultimate capabilities rested with the government of Sudan, and that government has placed every conceivable obstacle in the way, to the point where this week, Jean-Marie Gehenno, director of peacekeeping operations at the UN, has said, we are faced with a terrible question. Do we send a force in that cannot even protect itself, let alone protect the people of Darfur? Do we send it in to fail? They don't have enough troops from Africa, and the government of Sudan is insisting that they be of African origin. The UN resolution said it should be predominantly African, not exclusively. And then not a single country has donated even one helicopter, despite the pleas of the general of the proposed force. So it's as if we're just seeing the resolution being strangled to death while the world just mutely watches, because no one will take on China.
So I can see you're going through the programme here. Is there anything that's particularly drawn your attention?
I don't know much about Darfur, so I'm interested in everything they're doing.
And what have you seen so far?
I just went to the theatre. Then after here, we just watch a movie.
I've literally just come in. I've seen some photographs downstairs and a tale of a guy from Darfur who's been smuggled over to England and how he's found life in England and what he's had to face.
There are all kinds of different genres of things happening today. There's plays and films and debates, like the one we're just about to see now. What do you think is the best method of telling you about what's happening in Darfur?
I just think something that strikes you. It could be on the internet, it could be a blog, it could be a newspaper article, it could be a photograph you see at a gallery, anything that captures your interest and gets you thinking and taking action about that event.
We just saw this event where they were talking about, it was like they were in Darfur and it was like really deep and everything, because it was sort of like explaining what it would actually be like there.
And was it good? Was the play good?
Yeah. It's very informative sort of thing.
Janjaweed, isn't he?
Yes.
I heard some of the things they did. Did you?
Amber Massey Blomfield wrote the play Gun specially for today.
The play is about two young fur girls, members of the fur tribe, and they're growing up in Darfur, kind of in the midst of the genocide. And they suddenly find themselves in a situation where they find one of the Janjaweed militia, who are the people who are perpetrating the genocide. One of the militia has been knocked out and their gun is lying beside them. And so they suddenly find themselves in the position where they have the choice to shoot this Janjaweed militia or not, and they've got to decide what the right thing to do is.
He's waking up. I'm scared. We run away.
The gun.
Don't.
I...
Don't say anything.
Please.
Be quiet.
Please, little girl.
I'm going to...
Please.
Aisha, no.
Are you going to shoot me?
Yes. Aisha, think about this. You can't.
Little girl, I have a wife. A daughter.
Why did you decide to write a play? Why did you decide to write this play?
Well, because I'm a playwright, first of all, so that's my medium. I think it's incredibly powerful medium, you know, having people together in a space, you know, a live medium where we're all sort of engaging in the same topic in that way. I was invited to write this play about Darfur. I always write about fairly political issues. I wanted to focus on the role of arms in the genocide because I think that's something that hasn't really been considered in a great deal of depth, and it's got quite an interesting history and so on.
Well, I'm joined here now by Munim and Adam, who are two members of the Darfuri community in England. Tell me, what have you been doing here today, Adam?
So I've been speaking, you know, for the international people, you know, to do it something for Darfur, you know, because if we go back there, you know, we know government are going to take us, you know, to enjoy in the with them, you know, and then we go back to kill, you know, our people.
So you've come here to give the message to the UK government that it's not safe for you to return yet?
Yes, that is absolutely.
And Munim, tell me a little bit about what brought you here. When did you arrive in England?
It was in 2005.
And you now live in Newport?
I live in Newport now, nearly 3 years. And I live in Newport. They helped me for everything, for studying, and they give me my good life. But I'm still, when I stay good life, but thinking for a family, therefore, I'm not thinking here what I'm living here. I'm just thinking for them back.
Adam, did you come over here to England on your own? Have you brought any members of your family with you?
I don't have any family. I don't have any friend, you know. So my family, all friend, you know, all my best friends are being killed, you know, in Darfur. So only people what I just meet here. And
Munim, you're planning on going back?
Am I planning if my country, I will need to go to see them. I'm scared until now. How can I go there?
Is there one message that you're trying to give over during this whole festival?
Yes, the message is that everybody can take action. Everybody can make a difference. And also never to forget that the headlines and the stories are all about people. All about people who are like you and who are like me. What we'd like people to understand is that if something traumatic or tragic happens to somebody at the other side of the world, I feel it as if it happens to me. Because if I can feel it that closely, and that's what all the arts programming is about, then I really will do something about it.
Guardian Unlimited.